The jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
This is the Hagman and Hagman Report for today. It is Friday, November. Yeah.
November.
You know what? The weather guy on our local news channel said the same thing.
November.
And then he came back and says, I don't know why I said November. So there must be something. Maybe it's just a whatever. Folks, it is January 22nd, 2016. I am oriented to date, time, and place now. And we're coming to you live from our radio and television studios in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania, where we're heard live every weeknight, Monday through Friday. What a rookie mistake, by the way. From 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Global Star Radio Network, the place to be, as long as they'll have us. Unless I start saying we're in some sort of time warp. Folks, we're also simulcast on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Blog Talk Radio, you can watch us live on our YouTube channel. Links to each audio and video venue accessible off of HagmanandHagman.com.
And also, we don't give this number out a lot. If you want to listen by the telephone,
yep.
The number is 605-475-8092. That's 605-475-8092. I was reminded to do that today by a listener who is talks with a number of truck drivers who listen to our show.
Right, right.
And
actually, we've got a whole number of police officers that have this playing in their patrol cars, friendly police officers that know what's going on, and in fact they send us information that we incorporate into the news headlines. So it's good stuff, and really we're thankful for the family of listeners we do have, and we're ever so thankful to the allies in the war against lies and the exposure of the truth. So thank you all. Now, folks, in case you don't know, new listeners, I'm Doug Hagman at the helm. Fellow investigator, researcher Joe Hagman is to my right. Of course, if you can't, if you're listening to this, you can't see it, but if you're seeing it, you can see him to the right. And, together, we are the Hagman and the Hagman Report. Joe Hagman, of course, my son, Doug Hagman, the senior host, that's me. And, we dig deep into topics that the mainstream Illuminati-controlled mass media won't. You know, tonight's program is a continuation of last night. We skimmed the surface on a couple of issues, on numerous issues last night, and really didn't get into one of the major things that we talked about last night was the war on numerous fronts, but part of that was the war within the body, the war within the community of truth-tellers. And it's really ramping up, and it's really getting ridiculous to the point where you've got to sit back and you've got to wonder, well, okay, and I would put myself in a position, if I'm a listener, who do you listen to? Because there are so many now, it's like the Wild West out there in terms of the internet. You've got so many different options. You've got so many different personalities. You've got so many different deliveries, modes and methods and styles of delivery. And what we try to do is we try to bring integrity through truth and verification through our broadcast. This is what we attempt to do. And everything else is just glitz, glamour, and you know, but it's for a purpose. It's the purpose is to grow. As we grow, we want to be able to provide you visuals. And Eric the Tech and I were talking earlier, you know, that's going to become a reality here in short order. And within the next couple of weeks, you're going to see a dramatic, I don't want to use the word dramatic, you're going to see a significant change in a lot of things and how we do things. And that's a really great thing. So that means we're growing with your help, with your kind assistance, with your prayers, with your support. This is a great thing. And it can only benefit the listener. So, you know, that's the way it is. And it's great. It's great to be here. And we want to thank each and every one of our listeners, especially those who are new to the program, and welcome you in. I want to wish, I had a meeting today with our accountant, bookkeeper, who we're working with, to make sure, you know, as an oversight that we're doing things properly. Spent a good number of hours with him today, and I want to wish him well. He's leaving here at 1:30 in the morning for missionary work out of the country. He's going to be gone for a couple of weeks. And
not something you hear from an accountant.
No, especially at this time of year. But you know what? I've known this young man by my standards, and I've known him to be a rock solid Christian and having Christian values and doing things right. And that's just one of the things. If we are to be good stewards, we are called to be good stewards, especially, you know, of our accounting is to God, and that's the way I look at it. And that's his philosophy too. You know, you do things right, you do things, you make sure that, for example, you make sure that you can help people where they need help if you're in that position. You make sure that things are done properly and above board. You make sure that you're accountable to not just yourselves, but you're accountable to the listeners. You're accountable to God especially. And that's so, you know, it's refreshing to hear. And you're right, Joe. It's refreshing to hear that from an accountant. But who cares about what we did today, right? A lot of news today, and, you know, this war on all fronts is kind of punctuated, if you will. Joe, I wanted to mention about the volcanic activity in Mexico. And one of the things I was reminded today about this is I want to say David Wilkerson, but that is not necessarily true, talking about when you see the evacuation of Mexico City, or when you see the evacuation or the volcanic eruption that would cause a potential disruption in Mexico that would affect the Mexican economy, that seemingly starts some sort of clock, countdown, if you will, toward problems globally and big problems. Okay.
Okay. So you're saying there was at some point you came across something that said there was a pastor who stated these things?
I want to say David Wilkerson, but I know that is likely incorrect, okay? But if you put it in that context, so...
What's,
you know,
the volcano name?
Boy, let's see, here. I'm not good at Spanish, so...
Poco...
Yeah, that thing.
Catapete? Poco Catapete?
You know what? I'm not
just butchering the name.
Yeah, the volcano, it's the obvious smoking volcano down there around Mexico City that went
35 miles from Mexico City, right, 20 miles from the nearby city of Puebla. It sent a mile-high plume of ash and smoke into the air, putting thousands of people living within 10 miles of it on a yellow alert, being ready to evacuate should activity increase. And apparently activity has been increasing.
It does look that way. And again, against the context of the David Wilkerson prophetic insights, when you see this take place, you know that things are going to be happening in rather quick fashion. And that's all. I mean, you look at this as a bookmark in history, or more than a bookmark, but kind of like a signpost as you're traveling down the road. It would seem to me that this is something that we should be keeping our eye on. And the major effect is not necessarily the volcano itself or the destruction the volcano would cause. It's more the economic impact that it would have that would set the Mexican economy back, which would start a series of cascading events that would affect the West. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And you might be right about David Wilkerson's prophecies about Mexico.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, but I'll look for it.
And if I'm incorrect, you know, feel free to go ahead and correct me. But regardless, it doesn't matter. The messenger doesn't matter. The message is what counts. And the message is, you know, when you see these things happen, then perhaps we should be taking closer notice at not necessarily Well, we should be taking closer notice at the time, I guess. That's what that's the whole thing that we're saying. And you know, and it's interesting because it's becoming more and more difficult, folks. If you haven't noticed, it's becoming more and more difficult to really triage the headlines, because there's a lot of fluff and chaff out there. Fluffs might not be a good word, because that the many headlines are inserted to divert one's attention, our attention collectively, from what the real big picture is.
Right. When you talk about, you know, a war on all fronts, we'll start with the spiritual aspect of it.
There you go.
You know, we have weapons to use in these wars. You know, we have a spiritual war, an information war going on right now. And, you know, the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, as Scripture says. You know, we have the ability to discern and understand, and that's as much as the Lord will show us, and that deals with obedience, and our relationship with Him will determine how our discernment and how accurate our discernment is.
That's
and,
right.
You know, in order to, in Second, I believe this is Second Corinthians. For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war after the flesh.
Right.
And there's many other references to battles and war in Scripture, from the beginning to the end, from Revelation to Genesis. And we have the spiritual war. We have the spiritual weapons that are listed in Ephesians, where, you know, the breastplate of righteousness, the helmet of salvation. I'm paraphrasing here. And we have, as I said, the information aspect, which is also spiritual in nature, because the Lord can help us in our understanding and our discernment in determining what is right from wrong, what is truth from fiction. And in the information war, all we have is truth and facts that we can use as weapons.
That's true. Yeah.
And we have to understand that as much as we don't want to be part of a war, we are being engaged at all levels,
and
so we must engage as well, from a defensive position.
Well, either that or get mowed over. And the old saying, you know, duck or bleed applies mm-hmm. here. Okay, so anyway, I'd like to open up tonight with what we kind of left a little bit yesterday. We touched on this, and we didn't really punch it home, but I'm going to reference a very good article from cite heavily, I should say, from a website called thegovernmentrag.com, and Jack Mullen, he's a contributing writer there. He writes that the U.S. economic collapse forecast 30 years ago has begun. And in case you haven't, on our program, we talk about the magazine The Economist, for example. We talk about that much. We talk about that a lot. Well, it's no longer debatable. It's no longer deniable that the collapse has begun. So everyone should be on alert for either a false flag event or a series of false flag events that's going to either distract or to cast blame on some patsy or some orchestrated, manufactured enemy, convenient. For example, now here are some signposts along the way, and this is kind of a recap of the week in terms of the economic news, but let's just consider this now as kind of a summary. Number one, the Baltic Dry Index is at an all-time low. There are very few cargo ships at sea moving between nations. This worldwide collapse, well, one could say that behind all of this, okay, lies the presence and exertion of influence by central banks. Now, the Baltic Dry Index is based on a daily survey of cargo agents throughout the world. it's a not really a complex formula, but it has to do with the cost of moving goods. But the bottom line is,
see, we're always told, you know, supply and demand is what drives the consumerism.
But that's only to an extent,
people who, you know, share information about what is needed. Like Walmart has instituted a plan or a they've implemented the RFID system into their inventory. So if something is taken off the shelf and purchased, it registers in the system and knows that it needs another one. And a lot of grocery stores and department stores have done this. So where's the disconnect, I guess? Has the consumerism slowed down that much? I don't believe it has slowed down that much to where the Baltic Dry Index should be as low as it is.
Well, correct. So you're absolutely right, and this is a good observation that people. I think people are missing the point when we talk about this. For example, in the United States, we're looking at a situation where it just doesn't pay. Really, it doesn't pay for the for throughout the West, it doesn't pay for the ships to move to bring the goods to this country. Now, we reached an all-time low of the Baltic Dry Index. I mean, what was the last recorded? What was it, 355 or
that 350? Was yesterday? I had to check for today.
But, well, the bottom line is this: you know, this is predicted 30 years ago, and I mentioned The Economist earlier. Well, 30 years ago, folks, if you recall The Economist. From 30 years ago. Now we're talking, what, back in 1985, 86, the cover of The Economist, and we've showed this before, get ready for a world currency. It was the picture of what I would call
Phoenix.
A phoenix. Yeah, some say it's an eagle, some say it's a phoenix. You know, it doesn't really matter. What matters is the message, get ready for a world currency.
Yeah, Norway's largest bank calls for a total end of cash. That's news we're going to hit today.
Right.
And the Baltic Dry Index closed 1 point down from yesterday at 354.
Okay.
From 355 yesterday to 369 on Monday.
Okay. Well, and what I have up here on my screen is they cover The Economist from 30 years ago. And it's in case the viewers out there haven't seen it, it's pretty interesting, and it really is get ready for a world currency, and we'll just keep that up for a moment because I do have some notes behind that, so there you've got that. So this is, people are looking at this, and the majority of people in the country, in the West, in the world, but specifically in America. They're looking at this as some sort of contemporaneous, sudden, and unexpected, perhaps even unavoidable event with respect to the economy. That's not the case. This is an orchestrated takedown. And, I mean, that's what this is. This is an orchestrated takedown. So, that's been planned for the last three decades, longer than that, but openly in the open. All right, so you got the Baltic Dry Index at an all-time low. The you know, in the United States, and again, I'm citing heavily from the governmentrag.com, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, but here in the United States, a financial collapse was actually guaranteed when the Federal Reserve insinuated itself as a provider of American credit in the 1913 coup of our economy. And it's always the case. Any system of currency or any financial system of debt-based currency must always collapse. I mean, that's a given. And it's a criminal event. It's a method to drain wealth via interest payments until interest payments can no longer be sustained. And there are other factors as well that actually have an effect on the life of the currency, one's currency. And there's numerous historical accounts that any person of reasonable sensibilities can look at. So, however, one of the more effective prolongers of the U.S. dollar strength and the value of the dollar has been what? When they take away gold and silver from backing the dollar, Well, what do you back it with? And, of course, the answer is, well, it's the petrodollar,
of course. It's the petrodollar. Right. It is the ability of the American economy to continue to pay interest payments to the bankers. It is us as people and land as collateral, and the working capital as collateral to the debt.
Right, right, exactly. And this is all a Ponzi scheme. I mean, this is all a Ponzi scheme.
Just like the money is a manipulative Ponzi scheme to destroy wealth, so is this world the manipulative spiritual scheme to destroy the righteousness and godliness that was given to us. Just as the money system is a counterfeit object of debt, so is the spiritual aspect the world offers. And we'll get into more than that later.
Exactly. And that's a very good connectivity, you know.
I was watching an odd YouTube video today, and it said to look up the definition of debt in the Webster's Dictionary.
Okay.
And when you look it up, it's sin as the definition.
Well,
which, you know.
Forgive us our debts as we forgive those. Okay.
Right.
Exactly. There's a direct correlation between debt and sin. And you know, folks, if you've been out there and you've lived long enough and you've had to borrow a substantial amount of money, we'll say from your parents or from a friend. Okay.
What's substantial?
Well, it doesn't matter. It's relative. But, or anybody, you become a servant. You are now a servant to the lender. And that's really one of the biggest problems. And in the Western world, whether you're listening to this in the UK or Australia, New Zealand, or wherever you might be, what happens is you are now subjugated to the lender, and you are indebted to, in fact, you are being controlled by that. So anyway, but the petrodollar right now, as we're looking at it, what's going on? Well, there are end arounds being conducted by Russia and China through the use of other than petrodollars. Okay, so
as they've set up systems outside of the IMF control, World Bank control, where they have been trying to back their money up by gold, Russia and China, the China. Yuan has become China. An instrument of the central or the reserve currency status in the IMF this year. It has overtaken the U.S. on trade and overtaken the economy, China's economy has. And is poised to become the currency reserve status.
Right.
I don't know. I can't think of the term. But
well, we
can go over this again. Yeah. But when you have the world reserve currency status as the U.S., we don't understand the financial benefits it brings us in our everyday life, whether it's gasoline or food or our bills and mortgage payments.
And you know what, Joe? There are cheerleaders who will say, well, good. Let's take down the. I mean, good. Let's get rid of the Fed. Through this,
and they're not wrong. But you know,
well, no.
The day the dollar loses its world reserve currency status, the price of everything will instantly double at the very least.
Right.
From everything I've researched.
Exactly. Plus, you're if you think you're going to be free from a manipulated currency, you're wrong by merely getting rid of the Fed. No. What's going to happen is you have a larger Fed, so to speak, in the form of the IMF, and you know, so it's you're replacing one Ponzi scheme with just a larger Ponzi scheme, and the game of manipulation was designed to maintain the. Well, the value, the virtue, the respectability of U.S. bonds, of the bond market, while holding the dollar what it could purchase. So right now we're seeing oil-producing countries actually rebelling against the attachment of their assets to the value of the dollar. In other words, they're saying, well, no. We're not going to be compelled to sell our oil via petrodollars. Now, so now you've weaponized, as this has long been, oil has now become a financial weapon, a weapon of war. And again, you're looking at a weapon of war in the form of oil. Meanwhile, the real people who are disconnected from reality are enjoying the gas prices at the pump. That's fine. But understand, everything comes at a cost. And the American debt right now, America has reached critical mass when it comes to personal debt. The demand for debt has collapsed, the demand for debt is collapsing, basically. Okay, the T-bond face values, they're beginning to crumble. Yields are starting to rise. What all of this means is we are seeing really kind of the chain stoking of the U.S. dollar. Now, how long this can last, when I use the term chain stoking, of course, I'm referencing a medical term, you know, that a person, if you've ever seen a person pass away, they go, oftentimes, they will engage in what's called chain stoking, and that's a series of irregular, shallow breaths, and then death is imminent. That's what we're seeing here with the U.S. dollar. And that's the, don't forget, Kyle Bass had talked to, I believe it was Geithner, who said, we're just going to kill the U.S. dollar. And again, this is part of it. This is all part of the bigger picture. And you know, the globalist Luciferian elite have engaged. This has been talked about for years, and as indicated as on the screen again, the cover of the Economist from 30 years ago. This has been talked about. This has been pushed in our faces for years. We have been programmed. There, the predictive programming scriptwriters out there, to take us through this currency collapse and rebuilding. You know, look, we are headed for a third world nation status for the United States with a currency that will become worthless, a tremendously gutted and exported manufacturing base. You know, what was this mass exodus? And you know, people make fun of Ross Perot when he said, you know, that giant sucking sound with NAFTA and GATT. Well, he was not wrong. And I recall people talking about this, the talk show host thinking, and I fell for, you know, I fell right into this narrative myself where, okay, yeah, Ross Perot is just being Ross Perot. He's just he doesn't know what he's talking about. NAFTA, good. Good for the global economy. No. Well, you know what's going on right now? Look at the unemployment figures in the USA. Look at every number that is provided by the mainstream captured corporate media has been munged, spoofed. Look, Office Max. In Office Depot, 400 stores going to be shuttered this year or soon.
Walmart.
Yes, Walmart.
What? Almost 500 stores.
Yeah.
And McDonald's.
Barnes & Noble, Children's Place, Walgreens. Okay. Some of the clothing stores, from American Eagle Outfitters onward, Pier 1, Macy's, okay. Kmart's, well, we knew about them. Pennies, Hallmark. I mean, the list goes on. Target. Look, folks, what we're seeing here is the orchestrated takedown of the American economy. Now, the question is this: can we survive? And I think the answer is yes, but what we are going to get at the other end of this, we can survive by adapting, but how do you adapt? Well, certainly you cannot adapt by inviting in and acquiescing to a world currency or a world system of finance that would require allegiance to a, you know, the mark of the beast or the mark of the beast itself. So we are being forced now. We are being forced, in my view, and being readied to through predictive programming, through brainwashing, we're being ready to be pushed into this system of this one world order, one new world economic order, and that's it. I mean, that's where we're at. That's on the economic front, the war we are facing on the economic front. And we can go, you know, even deeper, but I think the show that Steve Quayle and Ross Powell did on Tuesday, was it Tuesday? Yeah.
Monday,
I'm sorry. I think that speaks volumes, and Ross Powell's observations as himself, as a, and as an economist, I think that speaks volumes as to what's taking place. So there's the war on that front. But, you know, all through this, and one of the things in preparation, and I was looking at this during the night or early morning hours, when I was at home, I cracked open a few books and I was sitting by a little fire that I had, in a fireplace, not on, like, you know, not in the middle of the room, but I was going through some material and I was getting edgy here or, you know, getting concerned. I'm thinking, well, what's the thread? What's the golden thread here? And, you know, the other question I had, Joe, and maybe let's have a discussion here. In order for the globalist Luciferian elite to be able to pull this off, what's the golden thread? And I'm
going to pull it off.
To pull off the entire takeover of the country from within. What's the golden thread?
Well, they've already
here?
Done that.
Well, yeah.
As far as
but to, for us to accept it so readily.
That's a great question and something that I've
to embrace
back and
it.
Forth in my mind about. You know, think about 9/11, how those towers were destroyed and then brought down. Now we have a new tower standing in its place with a new name.
Yes, so the One Freedom Tower, right?
The question I guess I ask is, you know, when we read certain scriptural, when we read some, especially me, when I read, go through the Old Testament and the Old Testament prophets, Obadiah is one. It's a one chapter book where.
Yes.
It talks about.
And that's a
Satan.
Good book, by the way.
And you know, the. It says, behold, I have made thee small among the heathen, thou art greatly despised, the pride of thine heart hath deceived thee, thou that dwellest in the cleft of the rock, whose habitation is high, and say in their heart, who shall bring me down to the ground? Though thou exalt thyself as the eagle, and thy set thy net among the stars, nest among the stars, thence I will bring thee down, saith the Lord. I wonder if the way that 9/11 happened is the way that we're going to see this new world order ushered in, if we're going to see a massive destruction of the current order, as keeping the Hegelian dialect in mind, you know, problem, reaction, solution. The problem is the old world order. The solution is the new world order. Will they come bring it crashing down to where we have an economic and you know, a collapse and no communications available for a sustained period of time, leaving people to basically fend for themselves and fight a internal civil war against themselves for survival, to bring back a order into the nation where, and this could be worldly, it could be a nation thing, but America, I think, needs to be brought down and be powerless militarily and economically before the new world order is brought in. I hope I'm wrong as far as the way them having to bring it down, destroy it, and bring in the new order that people will, as you said, not only accept, but if my theory is right, beg for. Those left alive will most likely beg for it.
Which is really a problem in and of, I mean,
I guess the question that we have to ask ourselves is, as Satan trying to steal the souls of men, what would be the most efficient and productive way for him to steal men's souls while at the same time implementing the new world order? instead of leaving martyrs.
Right. And that's interesting. Interesting by itself. You know, I was directed by a listener who sent me a link, and I don't have the email in front of me, but I want to thank that listener, to a mini-series. And I don't know how many people remember this mini-series. You have to be, you know, somewhat older. On February 15th of 1987, a 13-week mini-series titled America with a K began. Okay, it's a 13-hour miniseries. And again, it was America with a K. It starred Chris Christopherson and other stars. Now, I wonder how many people remember that. And here, the gist of America, that miniseries, was, and this was done by CBS, I believe it was. And it was about a post-takeover of America. Okay. Now, I didn't have the time to watch all 13 hours of it. I do recall at the time, some of the information that was talked about it. I do recall I recall that time period, 1987. And I recall the hubbub about the series. But it was about America 10 years after a nonviolent takeover by the Soviet Union and the United Nations. And it went into, as I watched parts of it, it went into, and from memory too, it went into the psyche of the Americans who were living under this oppressive Russia, this control by Russia and by the United Nations, where, just imagine this. You're living in the heartland of America, and, you know, your job, or for example, you're a farmer, okay, and you've got farmland and crops and abundance of everything. And so imagine 10 years after such a takeover where, yeah, you might have that farmland. It belongs to really to the state, but you have to manage that farmland. But you're starving. Not only you, but your community is starving. You go into a local restaurant, and you can't even, there's not food to be had, or the food is substandard by any stretch of the imagination. And the reason I mentioned this is because what I thought was interesting at the time, this nonviolent takeover, there was no explanation for it. It just happened. And again, we are talking a decade later. That's when the series started, America 10 years after this nonviolent takeover. And toward the end of the movie, of course, there were some Americans that posed a resistance and fought back.
But they were probably futile in the movie.
Well, you know, yeah, and I'm not going to give away the ending in case, you know, there's no spoilers here. But you know, some of the statements that were made really kind of struck home with me. And the people at the end who were fighting or were objecting to the system of tyranny under which they were, you know, oppressed, were saying, where were you? Okay, the people who were complaining about the tyranny they were living under. Well, where were you when you could have made a difference? What were you doing when you could have made a difference? You were too busy worrying about yourself, worrying about your career in government, for example, worrying about becoming reelected. Folks, you get the idea.
Mm-hmm.
And that really, you talk about prophetic, and that, again, this is not 30 years ago, pretty much at the same time or in the same time period that Economist cover came out. Okay? So we're seeing a pattern here. We are being brainwashed. And I go back to the brainwashing. And if you don't mind me, until the end of the show, I just want to tell you that, as I mentioned earlier.
You want to take from now to the end of the show for yourself?
May I?
I mean, I can go now. The end of the show or the end of the hour? Which one are you?
What did I say?
End of the show.
No, I don't want to do that.
Okay.
No, just for the next few minutes, I guess. When I was this morning, I was fitful. I couldn't sleep, and I grabbed some books and And I sat with my dog, who looked at me and was saying, "Really? You're going to pull an all-nighter at your age?" Anyway.
I have trouble my age even trying to do that.
Yeah, which wasn't my intent, but that was pretty much the what happened. And so I mean, it was nice. We have a small fireplace and a small dog, and it's no big deal. So I'm sitting there, my wife is sleeping, and I'm sitting there, and I'm going through these books, and when I say books, and comparing them to the headlines of today in preparation for tonight's show, and Joe, you had mentioned last night that we should do a continuation of what we did yesterday, and I was in full agreement because we didn't really get into the depth. You know, we hit the width a little bit, but not really as much as we should have, but certainly we neglected the depth. So anyway, as to make a longer story short, I came across this common thread, and the common thread is perception. And mm-hmm. it's not only perception of the American people, but it is let's just stick with perception right now. The perception that everything is normal and it can't happen here. The perception that we are, the fact that we as Americans and we in the West, and I speak for people in the UK, and I speak for people in Australia, New Zealand, those people I've heard from directly, in other countries, even South Africa and Canada, who believe that what we talk about, yeah, it could happen, but I don't believe it's going to happen. All right? Well, where does that belief come from? On what basis do you adhere to that belief? And when I started digging into you've got to be able to step away from the trees to see the forest. You've got to take a bigger picture look at everything. And I do believe that the impetus or the cause for what has been going on here, how Americans have been made gullible to believe the lie, when Stephen Colbert and Bill Maher come on and say, you know, everything is fine, and that kooky conspiracy people like us are just pushing this level of fear that's irrational.
Well, many people have their perception altered, and then they continue to alter what is actually going on around them, having themselves a twisted perception of things to fit their own belief system, to fit an agenda or something that they wish or hoped for. It was the way they hope it was a certain way when it actually is another way, but because of that hope, they're...
That's a normalcy bias, but it's punctuated by this Norman Rockwell stuff. Yeah, go ahead.
He wrote a paper with an Adrian Vermeule titled Conspiracy Theories.
Yes.
In the introduction, it says, many millions of people hold conspiracy theories. They believe powerful people have worked together in order to withhold the truth about some important practice or some terrible events. A recent example is the belief in widespread in some parts of the world that the 9/11 attacks were not carried out by Al-Qaeda, but by Israel and the United States. Those who subscribe to conspiracy theories may create serious risks, including risks of violence, and the existence of such theories raises significant challenges for policy and law. And I find that statement very interesting because he says, again, those who subscribe to conspiracy theories may create serious risks, including risks of violence. All right? Now, this is in the same sentence. And the existence of such theories raises significant challenges for policy and law.
Right.
Those two things have absolutely nothing to do with each other.
Well,
I don't know anybody who has...
Think about it, though. Go ahead. I'll let you...
The first part again. Conspiracy theories create serious risks, including the risk of violence. Then the existence of these theories raises challenges for policy and law.
Well, only to the extent that those people who are awake, and I can see where I believe, if I can't speak for Cass Sunstein, nor do I wish to, but I can see where Once a conspiracy, and I know this from my experience as an investigator, when you delve into an investigation and you uncover a conspiracy, and believe me, the definition of a conspiracy is any two or more people engaged in a plan that's criminal in nature.
We have to understand, right off the bat, the term conspiracy theory is a theory about two or more people carrying out some kind of crime or working together.
Right.
So it's very vague and broad. It can cover you and me. Say we wanted to
rob a bank.
Rob a bank.
Well, no, anything criminal, to defraud, an insurance company, or to defraud, or to shoplift. I mean, by conspiracy.
By definition, yes.
Right.
You and me want to go and steal a candy bar from a local convenience store.
It's actually in what they call an inchoate crime. Okay, if you want to look at this, an inchoate crime.
Is it like in cahoots?
No, inchoate, I-N-C-H-O-A-T-E, inchoate crime. It is meaning that in and of itself, it needs another crime to be chargeable. So, maybe that's not an inchoate crime, but regardless, with criminal conspiracy, you've got to have an objective, of course. You've got to, for example, you're conspiring to steal, you're conspiring to commit arson, you're conspiring to murder someone.
If we look at this from a spiritual perspective, from what the Bible tells us, there is a spiritual conspiracy of evil spiritual beings and humans who adhere to these evil spiritual beings working against God and his people.
Very much so. Okay. And that's an often overlooked conspiracy, especially in the new media, by people who are just merely secular and not looking at current events through the prism of biblical prophecy. So I guess what I'm saying, in this case, and what we're saying in this case, is, and this is another component of the war on all fronts, you've got this conspiracy that does involve the spiritual, and I've never been more convinced that this is active than today. And I'm not meaning today, but I mean in the current realm. You know, Joe, I have to give you a lot of credit because you did have patience with me. Sometimes I'm a stubborn guy, and I know that you guys out there would never believe that I'm stubborn, right? Okay, I'm sure you'd never. We're hard headed. Okay, I know. All right, but no, and this proves that an elder can learn from a younger person, and I have to give him a lot of credit because he would talk when I would talk. For example, when we were on cases and we were traveling and we might have to travel 300 miles, either start smacking each other with things
I thought about how I missed those days not too long ago.
Well,
and couldn't believe it.
It's interesting because the spiritual component is often overlooked we'll throw out the words Luciferian globalist or Luciferian globalist elite, but we do so with it's so casual that we really don't pay close enough attention to the spiritual component. And you can hear, and I don't know, Bill O'Reilly, Butch Maddow, Rachel Maddow, Anderson Cooper, or any political pundit, whether it's on the left or right, talk about different issues, and they do so with a bias and agenda, regardless of right or left, politically. But what's missing from all of that, all of those people, and even on the radio, what's missing from all of that is the biblical component, and that's the most important precept
Absolutely. And we mention it and we talk about it. We try to understand it. I know I'm continuing to try to understand it, as difficult as it may be and as simple as it may be at the same time, if that makes sense.
But to your credit, you were always the one that you would always say, look at the and I'm not, I mean, not, this is not word for word, but look at the, look at what's behind the, these events in the spiritual context. And that's what we're forgetting. And you know, one person who really, really understands this, and we've had the pleasure, and I've had the pleasure of, actually working cases with Russ Bizdar. And you've, you know, we both have had the pleasure of spending time with him. And Russ, you know, working cases with Russ, okay, now, I'm an investigator by profession, and but when you work cases with Russ, it's all about the spiritual conspiracy. And I want to throw that out there because to give him credit. And so you bringing this in as well in terms of, you know, you pulling this in to the conversation. So there's this, really the satanic component to this Luciferian elite that we so casually just reference and not really get into. And we really need to understand the spiritual battle that's at play.
Absolutely. How many people think that how many people think that there are things that are left up to chance? I mean, I know people have free will to make decisions.
Right.
But what's left up to chance as far as the whole control system of the planet from the beginning to the end, from the days of Noah till today, from the beginning, from, you know, before man was on the earth, we had fallen angels, and before men fell, the angels fell, and
right.
angels tempted man and made them sin, and not made them, but man sinned because of the fallen angels. There has always been a confederacy, a league, or a covenant of evil plotting against those who are good and wanting to be good. At the same time, you know, it's hard to, I mean, you can understand it, but it's hard to also wrap your mind around it, what it says in Isaiah 45, and let me pull it up here, where, and I'll paraphrase it before I find it, where the Lord says, I have created the good and the evil.
Well, okay, you don't even have to, I mean, Isaiah 45, folks, you know, look that in your Bibles. But one thing, and this is important, I really want to get this in before I forget about this. In my meeting with the accountant today, who came to the office, I met him at the office, and I pulled in, and it was like 2 minutes, and man, you know, he's right there. And again, this is a Christian man. He's listened to our program. He likes our program. In fact, where he works, they pipe their program in, like in the afternoons and stuff. Anyway. The reason I mention this is because this was so, I believe, I mean, I got divine confirmation that this man is like really the right guy for the job, and how this all fits together. Hang in there. I'm bringing this around. We were talking about current events as we were leaving the building, and as I opened the door, and I had my studio dog with me, and she jumped on him, and I told her to get down, and I said, boy, sometimes things are just so chaotic, you know. And now, 2 hours, I had, to put it in perspective, I had gone, got some coffee, came back. But before I left, I was writing, I put a Word document on my, or a blank Word sheet on my computer, and I was going to do an article. And I thought, the first thing I thought of was orchestrated chaos. Okay, so I'm thinking, okay, I'm gonna write an article, and it's going to be called Orchestrated Chaos. Okay, so then I kind of forgot about that totally, and then I had the meeting, and my dog, and we were 2.5 hours later. I was walking out with him out of the office. Dog lady jumped on him, and I said, boy, sometimes things get just so, you know, everything is happening all at one time. He looks at me, and you know what he said to me?
What's that?
I was hoping you'd say, I know. But anyway, he said, yeah, it's orchestrated chaos. And I said, what did you just say to me? He said, orchestrated chaos.
So where's your article? Because to me, that's a confirmation you're
well,
right, right?
Okay, even the best intentions. That was at, I think,
no, I was, I know 11:30,
and then all of a sudden, you know, everything went sideways, really.
But you shouldn't give up on that article, though.
But I told him, I said, do you realize what, in two words, what you just said is the title of the article I was preparing to do, And trust me, the words orchestrated chaos never came up in the conversation. Do you think that's divine? I do.
Folks, you're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report on this Friday, January 22nd, 2016. We'll be right back after these short messages. Stay with us. Interesting discussion going on tonight.
And more coming.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.